Australia's asylum policy has taken a U-turn. It's a case of Back to the Future with detention centres on Nauru and temporary visas, which will keep asylum seekers in limbo for years. We're also hearing, though barely enough it seems to me, about the consequences of the hunger strikes underway. You might have heard Fran ask Paracelsus Aristotle this morning whether he feels responsible for the self-harming and hunger strikes that are happening on Nauru right now. The committee he was part of certainly informed the government's current strategy to break the business model of people smugglers, but this just doesn't seem to be reducing the number of people trying to get here by boat. And in Australia, people often seem to be perplexed why others are still prepared to risk all on a leaky boat, despite government policy in Australia and the uncertainty of detention and the risks of drowning at sea. Sociologist Professor Andrew Yakubovich believes we need to better understand the psychology of being a refugee, and that the government and opposition are playing what he describes as a doomed game they cannot win. Thanks for joining us this morning, Andrew.
Natasha, happy to be with you.
Look, the psychology of refugees, why don't the Australian governments get tough policies cut through with people trying to get here? Is it about a lack of access to information about those policies, or is more going on here?
Well, I think the first step really is to get a sense of what the assumptions are about the psychology of refugees that government and opposition really share. And it's a fairly weird and uninformed view of the world. It's almost like they've started doing economics 101 and they have a sort of rational choice model of human behaviour. And, you know, there's supply, there's demand, you know, they points cross, and if you move one, the other follows, and that's the end of the story. And of course, people are much more complex than that. And the dynamic associated with what the government and the opposition call the business model of people smugglers is, I think, not well understood. And the approach to it has been overly simplistic. And I think that's really where we start.
They have to start somewhere, though, don't they?
Well, they need to start somewhere, but if your assumptions about human behaviour are incredibly mechanical, then what you tend to find is not very much analysis comes out of it that helps you.
What assumptions are being made about human behaviour, particularly in relation to people seeking asylum?
Well, the assumption is that there is a decision at some point, that the decision is totally rational, that the asylum seekers are economic actors who have full access to information, and the decision they make is based on a rational assessment of all the information necessary to reach an appropriate outcome.
Do you think that is the assumption being made? Because I wonder whether often the assumption is more about, well, if we put this out there, slowly it will trickle down to the right people through various means, rather than this sort of direct policy straight into the brain of an individual refugee.
Well, if you looked at the YouTube ads that the government cooked up as part of this policy, you'd have to go back to the very primitive view of human behaviour as the basic assumption. Nobody thought they would work outside, obviously, whoever cooked them up inside government. But you need to understand the asylum seeker process as a long, long process. And there are many different asylum seeker trajectories. I mean, there are the classic Hazara ones, which have been, if you like, the most emotionally sort of resonant with people who are pro-asylum seeker in Australia. And then you run through Iranians, Iraqis, some Africans, the Sri Lankan spike that Paris Aristotle talked about this morning, and so on. So there are many different avenues and trajectories. But if you like, the archetypal one, the one that the policy is essentially designed to deal with, if you like, or is based on, is the Hazara to Australia trajectory from Afghanistan. That's the one that many people have commented on. It's the one which raises the most ire amongst advocates. And it's the one which most people looking at the future suggest is going to be a continuing, if not expanding area of pressure.
Just remind people what that pathway is then, briefly.
So
because I want to get to the psychology
of this.
Particularly the psychology of what you see is happening for refugees in their own sort of interpretation of their situation.
Okay, the Hazara population is a particular population in Afghanistan who have been the systematic target of the Taliban for political, religious, ethnic, cultural, racial reasons. They've been fleeing from Afghanistan for many years. Their flight starts either in Afghanistan itself, where they get picked up by the first link in this people smuggler chain, or they get picked up somewhere like Quetta over the border in Pakistan, which the same sort of thing happens. And they then get shuffled along that line until they get to Indonesia, by which time all their identity papers are stripped of them. They're totally dependent on the people smugglers. And then they're pushed onto the boats, often at gunpoint, if they start to get reluctant, and the boats set off to Australia. And if they're lucky, they survive the trip, and then they get incarcerated in some form or another by the Australian government at the other end.
Okay, that's one scenario. You think cognitive dissonance is going on here for people prepared to take the risk despite the Australian government and their policy. Just describe what you mean there, because cognitive dissonance manifests in all sorts of ways. Spell
that's
it
right.
out.
Okay, cognitive dissonance, I guess I would describe as the anxiety that is created between people's beliefs and their behaviour. An anxiety which tends to mean over time that as their behaviour is pushed in particular ways, their beliefs will be reshaped and reshaped and reshaped to support that behaviour. So the more intense it becomes, the less likely it is that random bits of information will change that behaviour.
So the dissonance is in terms of, well, yes, there are risks, but this is my only, but yeah. I will make it.
That's right. I will make it. And more particularly, I'm now committed to this path of action, and tied up with another element of this, which is sort of the sunk cost. Most of the money gets paid up front, right? So the investment has been made. Every day they continue as in this chain, they're reinforcing the behaviour and therefore increasing the anxiety should they actually disbelieve in the outcome that they've now committed themselves to.
Well, just explain what you mean by a sunk cost, because this is part of
the story.
The kind of strange mental calculus that's going on for people in this situation, you believe.
Well, I think, I think the sunk cost issue is a calculus on both sides. From the on the side of the asylum seeker, it's I put all this money and effort into this. I put all this time into this. My whole family may well have invested in this. They're all depending on me, right? Even though people are telling me now that it's not going to work, I've got so much invested in this, I'm going to continue, right? And people know this. I mean, compulsive gamblers, are classic examples of this at the extreme. At the other end, the Australian government opposition work on the basis that people will realise that the sunk cost supposition is an error, and that they will realise that the money's gone, there's no point in worrying about it, they should now change their behaviour.
Yes, I wonder if that at the heart of this is a feeling that the scale of what's been left behind, the hell that they might have come from, is really much bigger and more familiar than the scale of the unknown ahead. So they're prepared to kind of leap into that unknown, which is unfamiliar to them.
Well, I think that's
at any expense.
I think that's quite clearly a component of it. But remember, once you've been picked up by this process, you have an enormous investment in trusting the people who are carrying you through it.
So what role do people smugglers play in this dynamic?
Well, they're crucial. I mean, they're crucial as players. And, I mean, people smuggler has a particular aura associated with it, which seemed to be very negative. As the child of survivors from the Holocaust who survived at least part of that trip because of people smugglers, I would prefer to see them as illicit travel facilitators.
Are we just playing with words here?
No. I think it's different because, yes, the smugglers are acting on their own behalf. Yes, they're out to make money, right? But they are a crucial part of enabling people to survive, right? And I think that's something that ought to be put in the balance.
So, is there another way that the federal government could convey information that would change this mindset, that would shift this cognitive dissonance?
Well, remember how much of an investment people have in this particular view of what the future would hold for them. Right? Remember that there are multiples of information out there coming from all sorts of different sources, from family already in Australia, from the history of what's happened. That is, for most people up till now, if you've made it to Australia, even if you've been on Nauru, even if you've been on Christmas Island, you're getting a settlement outcome. Right? So for the vast majority of people, the information in the real world is saying it's going to be horrific potentially, but if you just hang in there for long enough, you'll make it. the government is trying to now, I think, say, if you want to hang in there, it's going to be so horrific that at some point you will...
Well, you'll be sent back.
Well, you'll be sent back or you'll break, right? And I think part of what we're seeing now and the interpretation of self-harm in this dynamic is a very, very emotional question.
Yes, I wonder where you see self-harm fitting into this idea, because once you cut into your flesh, you know, that's a reminder that, you know, well, here you are in the world, you know.
But these are people who are in immense emotional pain, right? The whole point about addressing this through a cognitive dissonance model is that anxiety is the driver, and anxiety is a penetratingly destructive emotion. Right. I mean, if you've ever had an anxiety attack, or you've known people who have had anxiety attacks, and you can imagine that going on relentlessly, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, it creates a level of psychological and emotional, almost physical pain that self-harm sort of becomes part of, in a sense, of the same story. Now, from the rational man hypothesis, perhaps, that government or opposition might use, this is simply an attempt to manipulate the government or the carers.
That it's an instrument.
It's an instrument in order to achieve that. You know, it's seen as something which is
or need.
Manipulative. And it fits within the Children Overboard psychological model that has been advanced over many years now as an interpretation of the moral failings of asylum seekers.
So getting information to asylum seekers in a way that kind of cuts through the information that they're receiving from people smugglers, from others, from other asylum seekers too, because
Absolutely.
They can mutually reinforce their situation. You think that you'd like more people to be applying for refugee status while they're still in their home countries?
Well, obviously this can't happen.
Of course
right?
it can't. I mean, people are often in fear of their lives. There's
no
way they can, you know, line up at the UNHCR and go, hi, I'm a refugee.
Well, you're not
refugee.
Allowed. I mean, you've got to be outside your own country to be a refugee. Okay, so the point about making an argument that the if you like, the psychological chain begins in the country of origin. So if you want to intervene in that chain, right, either you do something in the country of origin, which is almost impossible, or you need to recognise that there's already a sunk cost in the system at whatever the first point might be that you can actually intervene to get people out of that system. And I don't think the government is unaware of that. It's just so incredibly difficult, and it's so much easier to drop into a sort of punitive market model of human psychology that I think it overwhelms the very hard work that needs to be done. Now, one of the things that's clear from a lot of studies around cognitive dissonance is that if you actually want to change people's behaviour, then you need to provide them with information which is accurate. Right? It's actually got to be true, accurate, and, how can I put it, reconstitutes their self-image in ways that their current situation is taking in a different direction.
Another approach you want, and this is just finally, is that you believe that Australia should be processing asylum seekers in Indonesia. I mean, would that assist in this? That you set up...
Well, the Indonesian point, in a sense, is the most dangerous point for the Afghans and people like that, because that's the point they move from planes, boats, whatever... way they've got to Indonesia, to the most dangerous part of the process, the fishing boats that go down in the ocean. So if you can crack the information situation there and provide people with an alternative, that's where they are, that's where they need it most, and it's where, in one sense, the asylums, where the smugglers are the most vulnerable in their economic model. Because if you can, in a sense, rescue the asylum seekers from the smugglers' clutches at that point and give them an alternative, then you're starting to really break the model. Mm. Right? Then you're starting to change the way the market works, because if you have a market model of the whole asylum seeker process, then you don't intervene in the market by making it more difficult to buy the product with no alternative. You provide people with a product which is much more self-affirming, which is much more positive in terms of their personal outcomes. You want to reduce their anxiety levels as much as you can, and you want to get them back in control of their own lives.
The issue is numbers, of course, and with the imminent withdrawal from Afghanistan, you point to only increasing numbers in the
Absolutely
world.
Absolutely right.
So this is not going to go away.
No, but neither are the number of boats on the ocean.
Indeed. Andrew Yakubovich, thank you very much for joining us on the program this morning.
Happy to be with you, Natasha.
And Andrew is Professor of Sociology and Co-Director of the Cosmopolitan Civil Societies Research Centre at the University of Technology, Sydney. Joining us on Life Matters this morning, please do get in touch with your reflections on what you've heard. The psychology the assumptions about psychology that we use to inform government policy. Get in touch on our website, abc.net.au/radionational. Coming up later, Now Hear This, and also a very wild ride indeed, but in a tick, a taste of Talkback tomorrow.